We're going to continue our study on indispensable relationships. We're on our third part of Seeing Whom God Sends. Our opening verse is John's Gospel, chapter 13 and verse 20, where Jesus said, "Most assuredly, I say to you, he who receives whoever I send receives me, and he who receives me receives him who," there's my typo, "sent me," not send me. So We will be hopefully those that say, "Lord, send us," but he sent Jesus to us. I want to pause for a moment and look at just how emphatic and authoritative that statement is. Is most assuredly would be a way of, we would say, without a shadow of a doubt, never question this, never wonder about this. This is emphatically true. He says, "I'm saying this to you." So it's based on the authority of who Jesus is. He's saying so. In essence, another way to put some words around this to help us to know the confidence that we can have in this statement is that you can take this to the bank and it won't bounce. It'll cash every day. And what he is communicating to us is the important principle of receiving the people that the Lord sends unto us. And not only do we receive him, we receive the Father. And so let's talk about indispensable, absolutely necessary relationships. Those people that God connects us to, that we have associations with, we're involved in their life. And this can be, you know, more than one person. It can be two or more. And tonight we're going to take a little time and we're going to look at who is your Zacchaeus, because you need an underdog and they need you. Now, I want you to get the imagery of an underdog, and some of you might even be able to define underdog in your own life, because you may feel like that is a category that you've been in numerous times. But when I think of an underdog, I think of someone that all the odds are stacked against them. It just really doesn't look like there's a way that they're going to come out on top. And there's something within human nature that we want to root for those who have the odds stacked against them. There's something that we can identify with that individual. And we're going to discover something about Zacchaeus and about where he was and about why he was categorized as an underdog, and but how he came out on top. So let's go to our text. It's found in Luke's Gospel, chapter 19, verses 1 through 10. It says, "Then Jesus entered and passed through Jericho." The intention here is that he wasn't going to stay. He was just going somewhere. Jericho he was just passing through. There was nothing there that he was going to stop and do. There was no one he was going to stop and visit with. He wasn't going to go to the synagogue. He wasn't going to teach. He wasn't going to minister. He's just passing through town. Much like we pass through Pleasantville on the way to Des Moines. We're just passing through. We're not going to stop and do anything. And that's what Jesus was doing on this particular day. It says, "Now behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus who was a chief tax collector, and he was rich. And he sought to see who Jesus was, but could not because of the crowd, for he was of short stature. So he ran ahead and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was going to pass that way. When Jesus came to that place, he looked up and he saw him, and he said to him, 'Zacchaeus, make haste and come down, for today I must stay at your house.' So he made haste, and he came down and received him joyfully. And when they saw it, they all complained, saying, 'He has gone to be the guest with a man who is a sinner.' Well, then Zacchaeus stood, and he said to the Lord, 'Lord, look, Lord, I give half of my goods to the poor, and if I have taken anything from anyone by false accusation, I restore fourfold.' And Jesus said to him, 'Today salvation has come to this house, because he also is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man has come to seek and save that which was lost.'" So a son of Abraham. A son of Abraham means that Zacchaeus was a Jew. Well, what's a Jew doing working for the Roman government? I mean, he's taking taxes from God's people. So his own people really aren't really fond of him, and he's ostracized. And he's not liked, and he's not beloved, and he's not even considered one of the brethren. He's a traitor among them. And he went to the dark side. He went to the wrong side, and now he's part of the problem, and they have a problem with him. So now he's not welcomed. If he walked into the synagogue and wanted to sit down in a certain place, there would probably be the scattering of brothers and sisters away from him. He's not invited or really, you know, thought highly of within the ranks of the community. Even going to the feast, the sacred feast of the Jewish people, he would be someone that was frowned upon, and they did not care for Zacchaeus at all. They classified him in this way: he's a sinner. No, hold on. He was a Jew. He was a son of Abraham. No, he's an outcast, and we don't want much to do with him. He's just like the publicans and the rest of that lot, and we don't want much to do with him. Now, being stereotyped or categorized is a very challenging thing to overcome in life. So you feel like you have to kick and fight and scratch, and you don't have a place in society. You don't belong. And this is where Zacchaeus is. He doesn't have a community. He doesn't have a people that he can call his own. I don't even think the publicans and the sinners thought highly of him, because he taxed them as well. So he can't win for losing. He can't find an audience. One of the hardest things is to feel like you're alone and isolated in life and don't have a place where you belong, and that no one sees you, and if they do, they don't think highly of you. That's a very challenging place to be. So he's not looked upon, as I wrote in your notes, in a favorable light by many in the community. The Zacchaeuses, they have bad reputations. Many are categorized in a negative way, such as self-centered, greedy, or exploiters. Zacchaeus was probably put in that category. And as you think about who rooted for you when you were an underdog, or who you were rooting for as an underdog, I want us to consider some of these points. The first point in your notes is Zacchaeus is someone who is up a tree and out on a limb. And that's just not physically. I mean, he's out there. He's not accepted socially, mentally. This affects him financially, and for sure spiritually. Now, it says something interesting about Zacchaeus. He was rich, but what good is riches if you don't have anyone to share it with? Not much. So it identifies him as a tax collector, but it's very specific in Scripture. He was wealthy. But he was hurting, which proves that money isn't the answer to the problems in the soul of people. And while it does help to have some, it's not the solution. It's not going to help us to be healthy. So he was up a tree, he was out on a limb. Zacchaeuses are messed up. They feel very misplaced, disgraced sometimes, isolated, ashamed, and wounded. Truthfully, we all fit into this category before encountering the love of Jesus. And that is why a Zacchaeus is such a gift from God to us. They remind us of how wonderful it is to be loved. When I graduated from Bible school, at the closing of our commencement service, the president of the Bible school, Kenneth E. Hagin, stood before us. R.W. Schambach had just tore the house down preaching. He preached for an hour and a half. My grandfather, who is a devout Catholic, at the end of the commencement service, had a gathering at his house, and where the family was going to all convene and celebrate. And I walked into my grandfather's house, and as we were, you know, greeting all the family that was there and thanking everyone for coming, my granddad said to me, "Who is that man that was preaching?" And I said, "That was R.W. Schambach." And he said, "This is my grandfather." He said, "I'll tell you, son, that was one hell of a message." Just like that. Just looked me right in the eye and said that. And I don't mean that to be offensive. That's exactly what he said. So I'm just telling the story the way it unfolded. And I looked at him and he said, "That was amazing." Now, this is a man that listened to homilies for 20 minutes at the most all of his life. And yet he was captivated by an anointed minister and servant of God whose hand was on. And he was shocked. Charlene's parents were there, and another cute caveat story to this, and I'll get to what Brother Hagin said at the end of it. When Charlene graduated the next year from Rhema, her folks came in, and we're sitting in the Maxwell Convention Center in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and we're sort of up in the, what I would call, you know, the cheap seats. We're up in the third level, and because that's where her folks were most comfortable sitting, and we're sitting up there, and as the praise and worship team and the orchestra start playing and the congregation stands and begins to worship, and people everywhere, thousands of them, probably 5,000-6,000 people there at the commencement service, begin to lift their hands and worship the Lord. And Rusty, Charlene's mother, stepmom, looked over at me and she said, "Who are all the people waving to? Who are all the people waving?" You know, she kept looking around as if the papal, you know, the Pope was going to come in, and the bishop and all the deacons were going to follow. And it reminded us so many of the things that we're so comfortable with and that we don't think twice about are new to other people. And they need to be, you know, instructed. And so when my grandfather made that statement to me about R.W. Schambach, I was able to share, you know, "Hey, granted, he's got a radio program, and you can listen to him, and it's right here. You could pick it up in Tulsa every single day, and he's got some books, and God has used him in amazing ways, and he's a revivalist, and, you know, has tent meetings, and it just led to a conversation." And the good news is, from our family's perspective, from all of us who know the Lord, is my grandfather who didn't know the Lord at the time, came to know the Lord. R.W. Schambach was part of that, planting a seed or watering a seed in my grandfather's heart. And so I say that just to say that, you know, while we are so used to and at home and at ease with certain things, other people need someone to sit with them and to share with them the things of God and why we do what we do and why we worship the way we worship. And you say, "Well, what does that have to do with anything?" A lot of people feel like they're an outsider. They can't come to church. They don't know what to do. They don't know when to do it. I remember as a child, you know, trying to figure out how to keep up with the Mass when I was going to Catholic Church and what page we were on. Do I stand up? Do I sit down? Do I genuflect? When do I cross? When do I do responsive reading? And I wasn't, you know, as quick as some of the rest, and we'd go from page 2 to page 5 to page 9. You remember those days, Mike? And all of a sudden you're like, "Well, what happened to 6, 7, and 8? How come we went 5 to 9? And why are we on page 11? And when I came over and was born again and filled with the Spirit and started coming into, you know, more of the things of God in light of redemption, I had to have someone sit with me, and I did feel like an underdog, and I didn't know the program. I didn't know what happened next. I didn't know why we did what we did or why we worship. And someone was there to serve me and to help me because I was out on a limb and I was up a tree spiritually. So this is the statement that Brother Hagin made at the end of our commencement service. He took the platform, stood at the pulpit, put both hands on the side of the pulpit, and he looked at the graduating class as he was getting ready to charge and commission us. He had us all stand, and he looked at us, and he said, "Never forget how dark it was before you came to the light." Never forget how dark it was before you came to the light. And God is sending you into a dark world to bring the light and the love of Jesus. The reason that I like Zacchaeus so much is that I'm Zacchaeus. Out on a limb, up a tree, got a lot of issues. Feel like an outcast, a misfit, don't know where I belong, don't really have a group of people. Now, I have associations, but I don't have anything that I feel like you could hang your hat on and really, you know, when it comes to things that really matter in life. And so here's the second point. The second point is we need to keep in mind that Zacchaeus is a person, not a project. I think that's one of the things that I've talked about a lot throughout the years here as we gather, is there are people who are looking and longing for the truth. They want to find acceptance, and they're looking for a place to belong. And those are all felt needs, real needs, emotional, spiritual needs that we all have in our life. We have to remember Jesus was a friend of publicans, prostitutes, gluttons, tax collectors, and sinners, and was himself named among the transgressors. He was wounded for our transgressions. He was hung between two thieves. He was in that category. So he himself was one that identified with the transgressors. And one of the great verses in the book of Mark, and Mark really talks about the humanity of Jesus a tremendous amount in his writings and his gospel writings. And one of the statements that he makes about Jesus that it's always spoke to me is that the common people gladly heard Jesus. The common people. Well, what's that tell us? Just the everyday ordinary people. So think with me, if you're trying to impact people's lives and you want to make a difference in their life, do you talk over their head or you talk it in a way that they can grasp and understand what you're saying? Do you talk at them or you talk to them? I think we know the answers to those questions, right? So while Jesus was brilliant, Jesus spoke at a sixth grade level and he spoke in Aramaic. Aramaic was the language of the common people. The sixth grade language or the sixth grade education was about the pinnacle, that because about that age, what happens in the Jewish culture? Now, it wasn't that the Jewish people weren't educated, weren't bright, weren't brilliant people. They were. And history tells us of the brilliance of the Jewish people and all of the things that have made the world a better place because of the Jewish people. But think with me for a minute. When the young men reached the age of 13, they had a celebration, and they passed from what they would call adolescence to adulthood. And though they weren't there emotionally yet, and yet from a response or a responsibility standpoint, they became people that were involved in the community and working or being an apprentice in some way. So most people believe that from the age of 13 up into the age of 30, for that 17 years, that Jesus worked side by side with his father. And that he was an apprentice. And it took a while for him to become not just an apprentice or a carpenter. He became an artisan carpenter, which means he worked with all materials. So that could be jewelry, could be stone, it could be wood. And he became what we would classify as a master carpenter. And so that's just something to consider. So in their culture, you know, people that were despised and looked down upon, just didn't have a path forward. I mean, they didn't belong anywhere, and they were the rubbish. Luke's Gospel, chapter 5, and verse 30 in the New Living Translation, the Pharisees and the Sadducees asked this question of Jesus' disciples. He says, why does your master hang out with such scum? That's a literal translation. That's how they viewed these people. And yet Jesus was very comfortable and they received him and they welcomed him. He hung out with the Zacchaeuses. He was for the underdog. And we know many times in Jesus' ministry, he stated why he came. I came to seek and save that which was lost. that it's not the healthy that need a physician, it's those that are sick. And so I've called them all to repentance. So Zacchaeus, number three, he's out in the highways. They're out in the highways, the hedges of the community, and you'll catch some flack for hanging out with them. You will, people won't look at you sometimes favorably if you start associating with people that are marginalized in their mind. They'll think there's something wrong with you. And they'll categorize you and stereotype you. So you have to be prepared for that emotionally. If you're going to reach people and impact people and identify some Zacchaeuses in your life, then you have to understand there's some people that just are not going to associate with you anymore. And they're going to disconnect. And that's okay. That's all right. Number four, when a Zacchaeus encounters truth and grace, they respond willfully with repentant hearts and corresponding actions that are proven by the sincerity of their corresponding actions. So Zacchaeus' immediate response after just having the Lord say, I'm going to come and we're going to have a meal at your place today, is I immediately he's going to give half of his goods away. And then he's going to really do some soul searching. And if he's ever done anything by exploit or done anything inappropriately, he's going to return fourfold. So he's going to pay with interest, is how we would say. He's just not going to give them back what he took wrongfully. He's going to give them back what probably they could have made at the bank or beyond. And so he's making everything in his life right. Which I find this to be interesting. This is really the work of God's Spirit. I mean, Jesus never asked him to do this. It wasn't an expectation of Jesus, but it was evidence to Jesus that something was happening in Zacchaeus. So what was the Lord's response? Salvation. I see salvation. I see salvation. I see salvation. I see salvation. See, salvation is not just praying a prayer. It's the corresponding action that follows it. Jesus said, salvation has come. Salvation has come to this house. So is there evidence of salvation in our life? That's always a good question and something we need to reflect upon. Is there salvation? Is there evidence of salvation, of God coming and taking us out of the mire and the clay, the underdogs, the outcast, and bringing us into his fold, into his family, and cleaning us up and cleansing us and forgiving us? What response do we have to that kind of love? Is it to hold out and hold on, or is it to let go and to let God? Is it to, you know, no, I can't do that. No, I can't. I'm going to hold on to that. There's a rainy day coming. I mean, Zacchaeus, without ever being instructed, without anyone, you know, giving him anything to do, he just willfully, on the moment, realized, wow, I mean, someone has just met all of my needs. I have been identified. I have been affirmed. I have been welcomed. I have been, taken care of. And I am no longer an outcast. And I'm not an underdog. And I'm an overcomer. And I'm accepted. And can you imagine the emotion that went through him when Jesus said, you're a son of Abraham? He hadn't heard that. He hadn't heard that from anybody. His own family probably didn't even, he was the black sheep of the family, probably didn't even identify with him as the son of Abraham. Shouldn't I do this for the son of Abraham? So there's a Zacchaeus, you know, in our life that is in the shadows, and they're just waiting for someone to say, hey, I see you over there. I see you in the crowd, and why don't you come? I want to get to know you and spend some time with you. And who are those? Who are these people in the shadows? And they're marginalized, and they're messy, and they've got a story. And it's going to take a little bit of time, and it's going to take some patience, and probably it's going to take a little bit of money to invest in those people. But God has blessed us with all the above. I mean, God has given us all things that we need. God has richly provided for us. So freely we have received, freely we can be a distributor of this. There are so many people that are in this category today. and they're you know, just wondering. They have those needs, as Zacchaeus did, of just trying to figure out, you know, if they fit in anywhere, and if anyone just loves them, for who they are. So Zacchaeus, healthy. I wrote this down just for myself, is that, and I want to share it with you. Healthy people can help others get healthy. They know the path. So can you imagine Zacchaeus probably just, you know, I don't know what. That's part of, I think, what heaven is for. Can I put it that way? I don't know what happened to Zacchaeus after this, other than everybody whoever was betrayed by him or taken advantage of by him, you know, he showed up at their front door, and here he is with returning riches and money unto them. And so let's imagine ourselves, role reversal here for a minute. We'll stop. Someone does that to you. So I cheated Steve out of $500. And I know it, and he knows it, but I'm not going to do anything about it until I encounter the love of God. Now I encounter the love of God, and I want to do something about the wrongs that I've done, because the love of God would compel me to do so. And that's what happened with Zacchaeus. So I show up at Steve's house unannounced. And I don't show up with $500. I figure up, you know, I did that 2 years ago, so that could be $750. It'd be $800 that if he would have put it in the bank, or he would have invested and would have got 5% back, he could have, you know, easily had maybe almost double, whatever. And I show up and I say, I did you wrong 2 years ago, and here's $800. Now, what do you think my relationship with Steve, what's it like now? Am I a traitor, a betrayer, an exploiter, or scum of the earth? All of a sudden, I'm like, man, all of a sudden, we're on good grounds. We made it right. I mean, there's just nothing. There's nothing between us. There's not one thing in the world between us. And I was listening to Joyce Meyer, and she makes a statement quite often when she's teaching. And I don't know that people grasp the gravity of it, but I just want to share it with you. Most of her conferences over the last few years, she's been asking a question of all of those that are gathered. And she speaks to large amounts of people. And she'll ask, how many of you have someone in your life that you need to forgive? And 70, she said, without exception, the low number 70, but she said the average is 80% of the people raise their hand. 80% of Christians have someone in their life that they're holding in captivity, and they're in captivity because of it. And we see here what makes a difference is the love of God. It all starts with the love of God. Zacchaeus encountered the acceptance and the forgiveness and a place to belong. That's what people are looking for. And as a result of that, he had corresponding actions. He was repentant. And we have heaven to hear the rest of his story. I'm looking forward to hearing the rest of Zacchaeus' story.
Thank you for listening to today's message. We hope that it encouraged or inspired you to God's best. If you have any questions about today's message, need prayer, or would like to learn more about Living Word Fellowship, please call 641-828-7119 or visit us at lwfknoxville.com.